We're going. I just saw Miss Jones this email about the revised start time for Miss Edwards, or what is it?
Correct.
Yeah. What's BKAT, by the way? I'm not familiar with.
It is the Bremerton Kids Have Access Television. They're the organization that we partner with to record our appeal and regular hearings. And while they are available between 9 to noon of the original start time, they are not available at 1 p.m. So I was wondering if we'd be able to move back to 9 a.m. or somewhere in between that 3 hour window in the morning, or we will need to reschedule Ms. Edwards'
You think
testimony.
anytime before noon would work tomorrow?
Anytime before noon, so any like 9, 10, or 11, 11:30.
Mr. What about, I mean, could we do it on Monday instead then, or something, or would that work, or what?
Believe
We're
Monday's a
solved.
holiday.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, for
That's all right.
most people. So, well, Mr. Durnley, yeah, what about, can we do it sometime between 9 and 12 tomorrow, or?
No. So I spoke with her earlier. She's at work during those hours. We're trying to figure out if there's a way we could get her scheduled for potentially today. It'd be at like the earliest 4:45. Again, we're not sure whether or not she could make it, but if that would work for everybody, if we did it, I know it would push things a little bit past 5, but if that would work, would that work for everybody else?
It would work for me. So
I can make it work. It's fine.
I could too.
Okay, I appreciate that. Like I said, we'll keep working on that, and then I suppose if we can't make that work towards the end of the day, then before we adjourn, maybe we'll just set aside something for next week.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. Okay, sounds
Thank
good. Okay.
you.
Right. And I should say, Miss Jones, I mean, I can record it if that's the only issue. I
It's
mean, is it?
not necessarily a matter of recording, but the formatting and the uploading to BCAT's like public facing site. So
I mean, I don't think that's legally required, but as long as we have something that can be used for a transcript. But so anyway, but if that's the way the county usually does it, we'll try to
yeah.
stick with the program. So
Thank
literally.
you.
All right. Okay. Mr. Clemenson, we'll go back to you. Let's get the recorder. I didn't have my recorder going this time, but all right. Ms. Jones, is your recorder still going?
Yes, it
Okay.
started from the 1 o'clock. Yeah.
All right, perfect. All right. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Clemenson, still under oath.
Okay. Thank you. I am sharing my screen again. We don't have much left here, so we'll get through this fairly quickly. One last issue relating to the state of vegetation, which we've been talking about here in my testimony here in the latter half. Around the perimeter of the applicant's parcel focuses on its southeastern quadrant. We are seeing exhibit A304, which is aerial photography solely of this area, only of the southeastern area from 2015 to 2023. The structure on the neighboring parcel has been used as a reference point to ensure that the general framing is the correct on all of these photos. Much of the discussion involving the accuracy of the civil plans on the eastern side has been included in this appeal, in part because of the impacts to neighbors in this area that may not have been accounted for. I have personally seen this area from the applicant's southeast entryway via County Road, which is included that view in Exhibit A 79. This exhibit that we're viewing obviously looks at the progression through time. Some of the photos are blurrier than others, but 2015 and 2021 are particularly clear, which is helpful to us. Mr. Edwards has testified that perhaps one tree was removed behind the home site. This exhibit and A303 definitively show otherwise, the latter detailing trees removed. Ms. Vader has testified that soil disturbance was not present in the southeastern area. These views do show clearing there, but we can also see is that here also it's where the applicants have been conducting burn piles through the recent years. And that area I'm mousing over here on the 2020 view. We saw the burn pile in a wind-related exhibit earlier here today. The owner of the parcel to the southeast with the structure I mentioned earlier has informed me that the conversion did indeed extend to the boundary in this area, despite what is shown in the civil plans in Exhibit F19. Moving on now to Exhibit A305, you can see this structure here behind the trees. The bird's eye view, what we're looking at, by the way, is bird's eye views from Bing. If you've ever used Bing, their mapping tool, it's incredibly helpful because it's far superior to Google Maps in that Bing allows you to select a bird's eye view at various angles. And so you can take this angle and turn it around three-dimensionally. And at this point, the views that they are showing are still apparently from 2020. So this would have been 1 year after the clearing and about thereabouts the time when the engineer, Ms. Vader, would have been preparing plans. So the owners of the neighboring property with that structure to the southeast indicated to me that they installed trees on their side of the boundary, so over here, to block the new views of the applicant's activities. Mr. Edwards has testified here knowing about that tree planting, and this photo helps confirm that this clearing did go up to the boundary where the prior photography had shown solid forest. And again, that's why we switch back to look at this view here. We're talking not just about the trees up here that that disappeared, but also further down to the southeast, closer to the structure on Mr. Robley's property. Mr. Robley, for reference, is what was one of the co-owners of the Little Goat property at the corner of Southworth and Sedgwick that was quite famous for a long time, and he still resides in the area. He's the last we heard. I'm going to switch to a few general topics that sort of wrap all this together, that we've seen the impact evidence thus far. There's been a comment in this hearing that these impacts involved in this action may be speculative in a general sense, and I want to address that for a moment. The impacts are not speculative to my family. Speculation suggests conjecture rather than knowledge. We did not live with these impacts prior to the conversion, and we've had to deal with them in the 6 years since at great time and cost. It took a couple of years, though, before we truly realized how bad the impacts could be, perhaps through stages of denial, or perhaps because it took several years to actually document and see what was happening. But the trees and understory alongside the conversion were struggling, some of it outright dying. The wind and dust were clearly not a coincidence. The aggregate sum of the impacts upon our future home site became terrifying, and it has forced us to rethink the entire arrangement of how our parcel is arranged, you know, the arrangement of our parcel, if these impacts cannot be mitigated. As mentioned in this hearing, my wife and I have poured a significant amount of passion into restoring our neighboring forest after decades of neglect, dumping, homelessness, encampments on the parcel. It was used as a public park and a public dump. It's been a painful, time-consuming, and it's been expensive work. The applicant's conversion has now complicated these efforts due to the alarming heat, tree deaths, noxious weeds, pasture grass invasion, the wind snap, deer damage, and more in the southeast quadrant of the project. Mr. Edwards stated in his testimony that, quote, the impacts to you directly right now would be minimal given that you don't reside in the location currently, end quote. We could not disagree more with that perspective. It discredits all the effort that we've made to restore our forest, and yes, even pull back the vegetation along the easement road from the 9-foot wide tunnel it was when we first encountered it, filled with decades of garbage. The applicants have plenty of blame to assign to me personally for helping blow the whistle on the violation, but they do not mention everything that we've been forced to do to protect ourselves from the impacts since. We've started installing solid fencing and irrigation systems to protect that southeastern boundary from this impacts actions. I've alluded to this earlier. Constant watering of trees and understoring that area with hundreds of feet of 3/4-inch hose has been required to revitalize the vegetation after the dieback became obvious by 2022. 50 or more trees have been planted in that area, and ground cover has been installed around some of it. We spent thousands of dollars so far because of these impacts, and the loss of that time and money is not speculative. Our interest here is to avoid the fate befalling the other property to the applicant's northwest that has seen dying trees and noxious weeds define its rear landscape since the conversion. We've seen the pictures of that corner. The timber trespass in that parcel alone had a significant impact on both of us. We have donated trees to that neighbor, watered them as much as we can, because she wept, that owner wept over what happened where the applicant's road crosses her property. She is a penniless widow without the resources or courage to stand up for herself, and it is heartbreaking. It's my firm belief that SEPA exists to protect her. I'm going to be very quickly covering the exhibits A97 to A100 here. I'm going to pull up which one is first, A98. You'll recognize these as the relief options that were presented. And I'm just going to provide a little bit of background to each of these from my own personal perspective as to why, after looking at Kitsap County Code available to us and available protection of all of us, why we believe that these may be viable options for the county to consider. The first options seen here in Exhibit A98 is proposed as the least expensive and disruptive way to effectively mitigate the northwest impacts, including the paving of the roadway. In A99, we have a slightly different arrangement at the northwest corner. Mr. Edwards had indicated in his testimony that I contradicted myself since the second proposed northwest solution, which we see here, involves a 20-foot extension of the easement road to remove it from the neighboring parcel. He indicated my wife cannot simultaneously mourn the potential loss of the trees in the easement and propose further road construction. However, in reality, the proposed extension of the roadway here would not require the removal of any mature trees. The young trees currently there would be transplanted. But this option has drawbacks, and it's in part because the DCD identified geotechnical issues with the surrounding 20+% slope that the road was attempting to avoid in the first place. Mr. Smith had testified to this earlier today about the concerns about the potential of the road traveling close to the edge of the slope there. You can see this slope in exhibits A91 to A94, and the county's concerns, as mentioned by Mr. Smith earlier today, are in a exhibit A20. Finally, exhibit A100. I consulted directly with DCD Stormwater Environmental Reviewers in 2021 about the feasibility of this option, as seen in A100. This is a last resort option. I think nobody really wants this. It's a last resort if none of the others is feasible due to slope encroachment issues. I have never personally myself wanted to propose any mitigation option that was not reasonably possible. So what I did is I went into the DCD and I showed the photos of the applicant's southeastern entrance to them to confirm, along with the resources that they had and looked up, whether or not it could be used for access, the southeastern entrance with minimal impacts. They viewed the photos and their own maps and affirmed. One photo of that access and its vehicle gate is in Exhibit A79, which is shown from the county road. Moving back to one last exhibit here that was shown earlier, which just gets back to generally across the site. If you read through the comments submitted from the community, from folks not only immediately adjacent to the parcel, but also those two, three parcels removed, you'll see that the community regularly cited the request for buffering to protect the exterior of the cleared area. I agree with the community. I agree with the other appellants with this proposed buffer option for the protection of all neighbors by state and county law. I think it would serve as a good faith solution to the impacts as they both enter and exit the applicant's parcel. By identifying the impacts around the entire parcel, the appellants are aiming to protect all human beings and the environment, present and future, as SEPA proposes as its purpose. In short, we see, we hear, feel, smell, touch, and breathe these impacts, which is why we have collected so much evidence for consideration by the county and now the examiner. We would not be spending this time with you here today if the situation weren't so frighteningly real to us. And I think that's where I'm leading into the very last couple of points I'm going to make here. The applicants, through their opening brief and testimony, have made some disturbing, quite frankly, and potentially offensive statements about my character and my motivations, perhaps in an effort to discredit the appellant's case overall. And I'm going to take just a brief moment to respond to that. The applicants suggest that this impact evidence, and in fact, this whole appeal and associated neighbor concern, is driven by personal vendetta. I can assure you that what the applicants attribute to malice is actually driven by fear. We're afraid of the impacts we're already seeing. We're afraid of the impacts that could still come. We're afraid of the health ramifications for my family. We're afraid of the next timber trespass incident. We're afraid of feeling unsafe on our property. We're afraid of what the applicants might do to maximize their property rights in ways that could hurt us in the future. Since the applicant's arrival, we have been suggested to the impacts of the violation, their vague and unpredictable intentions. I have personally suffered a physical and verbal assault in the easement by a person associated with them. And what the community and the DCD have universally identified as a retaliatory plan to develop the unused portion of the shared easement and then use its permit approval as a negotiation tactic. We have every reason to fear the applicants. As for the community, I can testify that I've discussed this situation with many people across South Worth and throughout the county. It's amazing how many people stop when I'm working along the highway and want to talk about this. They're aware of it. And other community groups have been watching this case. Their social media are buzzing with it. Oftentimes there are private Facebook groups that are talking about this campaign. I'm not even aware of who these people are. But when I do talk to them, they are afraid of this kind of thing happening next to them. Nobody wants developers to come into town, convert a forest, in this case, in violation of the law, and watch the county DCD drop the ball. Nobody. I try to tell them that it does not matter who the applicants are or whether they are good or evil. I have been asked in the street whether these applicants voted for Trump. Who cares? It does not matter. It's not material to what we're trying to determine here. What does matter is the land use in relation to county and state law. We have to keep our eye on constructive solutions. The applicant's counsel seems primed to challenge the community campaign in this protest and this action. I can testify now that everything that has been done in that campaign has been an effort to protect ourselves. Although the community mourns the loss of the carbon sequestering from the applicant's former forest, no one is trying to prevent the farm use of the parcel. If you look at the proposed relief in this appeal, you will see that it does nothing to prohibit such activity. We simply seek to condition the conversion in realistic, code-supported ways so that the community can continue its own rural enjoyment, while the applicants can certainly have theirs. I have only one more applicant assertion to address, and then I'll be done with my testimony. Along similar lines, I've been blamed personally in this hearing for the failure of mediation and negotiation efforts. I don't believe it's necessary to dive into all the matters related to those endeavors, but to defend the integrity of my testimony in this appeal, I do need to touch upon aspects of two related situations that still reflect in the county's final decision. The applicants have badly mischaracterized the negotiations between the parties, assigning the blame to me for the failure of the talks. I can certainly assure you, I had extremely high hopes for those negotiations. I spent hours taking feedback from both sides, typing it into a file that could be edited and commented upon. The applicants never typed any similar counterproposal, and they certainly never indicated at any point that they'd made a quote best offer. Ironically, I believe the main reason why negotiations failed was because of Mr. Heacock's unclear conditioning, an issue that persists today. We see it in the testimony we heard today. Mr. Derlin asked Mr. Heacock about, why was this condition, revised in the final decision. We've asked who was responsible for making a determination that an existing preemptive buffer was adequate and sufficient. Nobody's been able to answer. So I do believe in the end the negotiations failed because we could not get answers at the time, and it continues to plague us now. Aside from the offering of non-development of the easement, which the applicants admitted they didn't really intend to pursue anyway, the only other concession by the applicants was the planting of that voluntary undersized buffer along the boundary in the northwest, as we've seen in the photos today. But the SEPA decision had already mandated those buffers. The applicants were thus not really conceding anything in return for the many considerations they requested, including the end of this appeal. I proposed several concessions they could make to mitigate impacts, but every idea was rejected. To save the negotiations, I had hoped that the December 2024 meeting between the parties, Mrs. Edwards, Mr. Edwards, myself, Ms. Olson, and Mr. Heacock, could answer finally questions about what exact buffering the DCD was requiring of the applicants. I never had the impression that the intent of the meeting was a mediation because both parties were confused about Mr. Heacock's application of Title 17500 to the most recent decision. It was my belief that we could return to negotiations once the buffer questions were answered. Sadly, no clear answers ever came, and here we are today. Thank you for hearing my testimony today.
Thank you, Mr. Clemenson. Well said. So move on to Ms. Ona. Any questions of Mr. Clemenson?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Clemenson, just a few clarifying things. Let's see. The sign that has been in a few of the exhibits, is that still on the property?
Which sign? There are multiple signs.
The sign with the some flags for the wind exhibits, as well as the poles were bent.
That sign was destroyed. It said there was a sign that said deforestation causes climate change, dark green.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes.
That sign was destroyed.
So it's no longer on the property?
That one is not on the property, no.
Is there any more signs on the property?
Yes, there is a sign that went to generally the same area that was in a few of the other exhibits that we saw. And then there was a sign out at the highway that protests just southwest deforestation generally. That one's yellow.
Okay. I was just clarifying, were any of those signs part of a code compliance issue with DCD recently over the last year?
I have heard from I think that's came through in a record request is what we discovered is that one of the signs had received a complaint from the applicants, and yet we have never heard from the county on that. There's going to come a time after this appeal is done, we have a little bit more time. I was going to reach out to code compliance and see if anything came of that, or maybe do a separate record request to determine specifically if there's a CC, if there's something there that I could look at in terms of a file on that.
Okay, understood. Now, what are your qualifications in evaluating environmental impacts? I know that you've mentioned the potential nest of eagle nest in a tree. I don't know if you have any background in identifying species of that nature or evaluating soil samples. Because I certainly don't. I was just wondering if you did.
Yeah, no, the experience comes from just a lifetime of working with arborists, knowing geologists, learning this trade. I am self-taught. I'm a communications and techie person, but I, having my hands in the soil throughout my life, I have gained a tremendous appreciation for that, and I have huge curiosity for learning about it. So it is a testament to my 50 years of spending outdoors.
Okay, and then did you have any experts or geologists or hydrology or any expert look at the evidence or exhibits that you have here today?
Specifically, the exhibits here today, the very earliest photos were looked at by Tree Solutions Inc. They're located in Seattle. They were advising us about how to handle initially our protections against the timber trespass area. And we wanted them to come out and sort of advise us on what we were going to, essentially what we were going to face. What's coming up here. And so they spent actually ended up spending several hours there because they couldn't get back to Seattle due to ferry mishaps, which are fairly frequent. But they spent a lot of time telling us how we could usefully apply the snags in the area if trees did die, what we could do for the understory in particular, because we were worried what was going to happen to the understory now that the conversion had exposed areas along the edge. We had considered having them testify, but of course they are expensive. And so we opted to stick with the evidence, just the hard evidence that we have, since this is an after the fact case.
Okay. And then last kind of clarification. Can you describe the state of your parcel as it is right now? Is there a permit structure on the property, or I know that there's like a cleared meadow on one area, and then I'm not exactly sure what's on the other side of the dirt driveway on your parcel. What's there?
Okay, well, the meadow exists on the applicant side of the parcel. If I
Okay.
could go back in time and ask the previous owners to not clear that particular area for the home site right next to the applicant's parcel, I think that would have been beneficial at this juncture. So right now, that 3/4 acre is open. There is the easement road that has been developed about 50% down the 20-foot wide easement. The rest of it is raw forest. There are a lot of weird artifacts. There's a giant well, an old well. It's about 12 feet wide, sunken way down in the earth in one place. Essentially, it was used, gosh, it was used like a dump. There were encampments in there, so we had to clear out tents. We had to clear out cooking equipment, pieces of vehicles. A number of vehicles have wrecked along South Rift Drive and gone down into the ditch, into the forest. We find pieces of those vehicles still. Now, in terms of the meadow, there is an open building permit. And so we are hoping at some point to build on the parcel. One of the things recently we've been waiting for is a determination from this permit. What's going to happen here? What are the mitigating conditions for those impacts? We are very concerned about the fact that the home is directly in the pathway of the impacts from that northwest corner. Sadly, our perk tests for septic only allowed for the septic in one particular location, so we cannot move the house significantly on the parcel. We can't, for instance, remove the northern forest closer to South Rift Drive, and we probably wouldn't want to anyway, because of the location of the septic. So we are holding on that permit at this time, but we are hopeful. We are currently doing some minor terracing at the top of that 20% slope that we were discussing earlier as part of this. Because we're hoping to plant a row of Excelsa cedars and some trees that don't have a propensity to fall over, the windthrow in that location, to help protect us in the event that whatever mitigation comes out of this permit just doesn't work.
Okay. Understood. I think that's all the questions I have. Thank you so much.
Minnesota. All right, Mr. Dirk, any questions?
Yeah, I have a few.
Oh.
So this is going to it's going to feel repetitive, but based on the testimony so far, I feel it's necessary to establish some of these things. So to begin, are you a licensed project engineer?
No.
Okay. Have you performed any permitting analysis or work in a professional capacity?
No.
Do you have any professional experience that would aid you in reading Kitsap County Code?
I didn't hear the first half of that.
Do you have any professional experience that would aid you in reading Kitsap County Code or interpreting?
Professional? No, just a lot of personal study.
Are you a licensed stormwater engineer?
Not that I last checked, no.
Okay. Do you have any professional experience that would aid you in reviewing a stormwater plan? Do you have a land surveyor's license?
No.
Do you have any professional experience with surveys that would aid you in reviewing surveys?
No.
Are you a licensed biologist?
No.
Do you have any professional experience that would aid you in reviewing animal impacts or related activity?
Professional experience? No.
Are you a certified arborist?
No, but I'd love to become one.
Do you have any professional experience that would aid you in reviewing tree impacts or other plant impacts?
A whole lot of discussions with arborists, but no education, if that's what you're
Okay,
asking.
so no professional experience, to be
Yeah.
clear. Okay, understood. Are you a professional aerial photography analyst?
No.
Do you have any professional experience that would aid you in reviewing aerial photography?
Other than my eyeballs, no.
Do you have any professional licenses of any kind that would that would aid you in reviewing any project documents in this appeal?
No.
Okay. And did you hire anyone that professionally reviews project plans or any of these other related documents in this case?
Not the project plans, because when we had professionals to the property, I believe it was prior to their submittal. So the concerns we had were about what we were seeing rather than what was being submitted, if that
Okay,
makes sense.
understood. But
Yeah.
to be clear, you have not introduced any evidence that was issued by or otherwise, verified by professionals in any kind of capacity. Is that
Oh
correct?
no, we would have had
Okay.
them. We would have had them as witnesses if we had. Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah.
Just moving on to some of the other appeal issues here. Just regarding some of your testimony, obviously there's been a lot back and forth kind of regarding your relationship with Edwards. If you could kind of succinctly describe it, how would you describe your relationship with the Edwards?
Unfortunate.
Unfortunate. Okay. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I think anytime you have a new neighbor move in, you're always hopeful to have great relations with them. And I think I'll answer your question this way. I recall the first time I met Mr. Edwards and his son. Actually, it was 2017, and they had talked about where they had come from. And we talked about what we were doing with our property and our plans to build someday and how we were trying to clean it up. And we asked them, hey, what you planning to do with your property? He said, well, yeah, we want to have a couple of goats, and things like that. And he said, one of the first things we want to do here is, and he asked us, I don't know if it was explicitly for permission or not. He said, we'd like to get a survey and put in a fence. And it pointed down the line, between our shared property. And I said, that's fantastic. I think that would be good to know where the line is, because as we know, some of the boundaries as that you see in the parcel view are off by a few feet. So it'd be good to get that done. And I said, one thing though, if you do decide to go ahead and install a fence, just make sure that we determine the location of the trees along the boundary before that happens. Because if there's a if there were young fir trees and so forth that were sort of right there in that area, and so we wanted to make sure we didn't lose any of those. And he assured us, yes, he would do that. And of course, it didn't happen. And so I think the relationship got off to an unsettled start, I guess, at that point. We had no indication that what was about to come. And so we, I think the reason I use the word unfortunate is because nobody wants to be in a situation like we are right now. We are an appellant. The Edwards are, applicants. This is all unsavory. Nobody wants to be here. So to characterize the relationship, it's unfortunate. There are times, I will admit, it's frustrating. But frustration, and this is what I tell the community. They always ask, who are these people? Who are Edwards? It doesn't matter. My personal opinion of what I think of Clint with Megan, in the end, doesn't matter. Their hobbies don't matter. What matters is the county. And that's what we keep trying to bring people back to, is
Okay,
focus on the county.
understood. Okay, I think that explained it. Thank you.
Okay.
So it would be fair to say that you've had disagreements with the Edwards prior to this proceeding, is that correct?
I think disagreement might be the wrong word. I think one of the issues that we
Okay,
have here,
let me rephrase then. You have there
yeah.
was a legal case that you filed against the Edwards for over easement, is that correct?
For what?
Against use of the easement on your across your property, you
Yeah,
filed an action against the Edwards, is that correct?
we filed action. I think we filed four claims as part of that. The question the validity of the easement, given that we had been discussions with the grantor, and that was to try to save the 70 trees. And then the other claims were, make sure I get this right, negligence, nuisance, and timber trespass.
Understood. And you voluntarily withdrew the timber trespass with prejudice, is that correct?
We voluntarily withdrew the other three, due to poor advice from counsel, which is why we fired her.
Understood. But as to timber trespass, it was voluntarily withdrawn with prejudice, is that correct? Or is that not?
Yeah, I'm happy to tell you what her strategy for that, but
No, I don't need to know the strategy.
okay.
Just need to understand whether or not it was.
Yeah, no, I have absolute confidence that we could have prevailed in it. But the strategy at the time was to drop the other three to pursue the D2 portion of the easement.
Understood. I'm going to briefly share screen here. So hopefully I can get the right. Oh, I have too many windows open. One.
It's like, did we lose Mr. Derwin? It looks like his screen's frozen. Give him a minute or two to try to get back on. All right, looks like it's back. Mr.
I think I'm back.
Yep.
Let me try that again. Hopefully, I don't get kicked out when I try to share the screen. Okay. Now, and assuming you can still hear me, is everyone able to see what's on my screen, small or the large sign over here
Yes.
and looking at the property entrance?
Yes.
Okay. So, we would introduce this exhibit as I think B5. If I'm not mistaken, these are just some of the pictures to kind of illustrate exactly what we're looking at in terms of the property boundaries. Some of these comments are from my client, Clint Edwards. I can bring him back in to corroborate them if necessary.
You said you have several of these, is that
Yeah,
right?
so I was just going to
Okay.
kind of, they're all in a PDF, so I'll kind of scroll
Okay,
down.
I'll let you show them all and then I'll ask if there are any objections once we've
Okay,
seen them.
understood. So to begin, do you recognize this sign that I believe we were discussing a little bit earlier, Miss Oates?
Yes.
Okay. Are you aware of where this sign is constructed? As in, I guess that's a bit of a leading question, but are you aware that this is constructed within the boundaries of the easement?
Yes, I know from what Mr. Edwards has said that he considers it an obstruction. We've been advised otherwise.
Understood. And then you can see, oh, here I'll zoom in a little bit on it if I can. I think we've taken a look at some of these plantings as well. But during so is are those trees located within the easement that we've been contemplating this whole time?
That is correct.
Okay, and when did you plant those trees?
Those trees were planted. I believe in they were planted in April. They were either April 2021 or April 2022. I believe it would have been April 2021.
Okay, understood. Would it be fair to say that these trees were planted after the adjudication of the easement?
Oh gosh, I can't. No, they were planted. Well, the easement took a while because the easement wasn't fully adjudicated until 2024, correct? Because it got stuck in discretionary review. And
Well,
then,
yeah, and I
okay.
can pull up, let me see if I can pull up the exact complaint. I don't think I have it up right now. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
I get, yeah. Let me see if I can
Well,
pull.
I know possibly where you're going with this, Mr. Durland. I might be able to save us some time. So
Sure.
the trees were planted in the easement area while that litigation was proceeding. And in fact, the applicant did file a claim for obstruction, indicating that these trees and then a potential fence that we've seen a little bit go in now finally would prove to be obstruction to them. And the, our counsel at the time indicated that a 3 foot tree couldn't be obstructive, really. But if it became an issue, or if for whatever reason this is to be developed, I mean, one of our proposals is to develop this corner, right? I mean, that's one of the options we've seen. These trees would be in the
Well,
way of extending the road.
I believe one of the your proposals was to fence off my client's property. Is that not? Is that right?
And that's not desirable. I think that's a last resort if we can't mitigate these impacts some other way.
Understood.
But more preferable would be either the first or second options. The second option would require these trees to be moved. It has always been our intention, if necessary, to move these young trees. So
Okay,
when we were
understood.
trying to protect the easement by getting with the grantor and determining, okay, let's try to contest this based on what the grantor is telling us, it was to save all the big trees that we see behind this.
Okay, understood. And then, so I'll just keep moving along here. This is another picture along the easement with kind of a short explanation. I believe so. Based on this caption, if you want to read it right now, that's good. I can blow it up a little bit more if you
Yeah, I need
want.
to blow one up. My eyesight is terrible.
Let me know when you can read it.
I can.
You can or cannot?
I can. Yeah, you're good.
Okay, great.
Shows the 350 plus foot distance between the easement
Yeah. So would
and the
you
Collisons home site.
would
I don't
you
understand that.
right so I get my question's just regarding the last sentence. Would you agree that there is a hill that would potentially be separating your future home? And again, you have not developed any, I think you asserted you haven't developed any portion of your property, is that correct?
Aside from just like construction entrance, gravel entrance for construction, no.
Okay, understood. And so there's
Well,
no.
I'm so sorry. I'm wrong. The fence required a permit because
Okay.
a small section of it was over height, so we had to get up.
Understood. And I'll get to the fence in a minute as well. Okay, so moving on. These are kind of just, honestly, these are more for the examiner's use, just kind of in adjudicating what the property looks like. These are more some of the pictures that we were looking at that were given by Mr. Clemenson are from several years ago, and so these are more recent pictures. I can get the exact dates from my client if that's necessary.
Mr. Drillin, by the way, I didn't answer your previous question, and
Sure.
I think you are owed an answer. You talked about the presence of a hill. The house would stand up, and that's the issue, is the build of the house would be higher.
Understood.
And that's one of the things we actually haven't determined, and we're thinking if we cannot mitigate all of the impacts here, we might actually have to excavate the basement, the daylight basement, further down into the earth. In other words, literally make the house lower is one of the
Understood.
things we might consider.
Just moving through some of these. So this is another look at just some of the plantings and other things that are along the, I believe you mentioned the fence that you had installed. So just for clarification, this fence is in between the Edwards property and the existing easement on your property. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And this is just another look at that same portion. So, and as you can see, there's that buffer area between it and the fence. The let me see. So, kind of speeding through some of these things, but more or less, would you agree that you can see that this provides a barrier between your and the Edwards property? My guess is that you would disagree as to the coverage, but there
Not from
does
our
appear to be a
side.
barrier. Is
No,
there not?
not if we walk along the interior of the meadow, we can see right through into, you know, what's going on in the Edwards side. It's not solid yet. And the other thing to consider is that we're looking at it in the foliated time of the year. One of the considerations, of course, is that we've got 6 months of the year where there isn't the deciduous
Understood.
foliation.
And yeah, and naturally, your pictures were taken during the winter. I think we both understand where those are coming from. So I just so those, I think these are all, let me scroll through very quickly, but I think I've kind of proven my point of the buffering area. This is another picture just kind of
Yeah.
along the property
And
boundary.
what you're seeing to the left there is that area of a sort of sparse vegetation with a few trees that was remaining from the original clearing that in our diagrams were in that yellow area.
Understood. Okay. So the and I guess just in terms of completeness, I'll scroll through these so the examiner can rule on whether or not we're going to include this as an exhibit. So these are all just more pictures kind of along the driveway. This one's just looking out over the meadow. Over the driveway, this is kind of looking towards the other property boundary that Mr. Clemenson was mentioning before. So to the left of the driveway when you originally enter the property, and same thing with that. So that's all the pictures that were included here. And
Mr. Gurley, I would like to know when the pictures were taken. I think we have to have that as part of the record. Mr.
understood.
Clemenson, do you have any objection over entry of these photographs?
No. I
Okay.
mean, we've got some that are similar. It's fine.
Okay. And Ms. Jones, what would the exhibit number be for this one?
This would be exhibit B6.
Okay. B6 is admitted. All right. Go ahead,
And
Mr. Gurley.
I can confirm with my client when exactly these pictures were taken and submit that via email later if that works for you.
Thank you.
Understood. All right, so I want to move on to our exhibits. I think that this is B2. So these are some screenshots. It might be B3 actually. Let me double check. So these are, sorry, B4, my mistake. So these are some screenshots from a website called southworthforest.com. Are you familiar with this site?
Dot org. I am familiar with
.org.
it.
Okay.
Yes.
So it sounds I'll take that as a yes.
Yes. Yes.
And I believe that that is I believe that's listed on the brown sign that we were discussing earlier.
It's listed on all three of the historical signs. Yes.
Okay,
Yeah.
understood. Do you are you in control of this website? Do you post on this website?
In
What's the
part.
makeup?
In part. So
In part.
the community group, as I mentioned to you earlier during Mr. Edwards' testimony, I host a number of websites. This happens to be one that I host. I do websites for a living and host them. And right now, primarily the City of Seattle's website, although I don't personally host that, thankfully. This particular site is contributed to by 20 to 30 people, although there's a core six or seven. And their names are all included on. Gosh, I think it's A81 and A82. In other words, when we put in the submissions to the county, to Mr. Heacock, the community submissions, essentially they were reflecting what were on this
On this
campaign
site.
And then in the social media campaign, the GoFundMe campaign, what was being in the direct mailers, you know, all of that was sort of combined in the whole, all the different facets of the campaign into those submissions. And so the names of everybody, some of whom are not alive anymore, sadly, are included there. And then I think on the site itself, if you go to the SEPA impacts article, I think they're listed at the bottom of that as
Okay.
well.
And I don't
Yeah.
have, I'm not live on the site. I just took a couple of screenshots, but so I guess just wanted to ask you, I'll go back to the ownership in a minute, but just wanted to ask you about a couple of articles that were present on here. So almost all of the headlines and articles here are specifically regarding my client's property. So
I would object to that. Mr. Derland,
okay, well we
I
can
would
go.
object to it. The reason I object to it is because
We can go through them if you'd like.
you know something. I've watched your sessions. I've seen what you've been looking at. You were just back there here just now, on the server. And the most popular articles on this site, are not related to this. I mean, right now the Coast Redwood story is number one. As a matter of fact, the most recent article right now is one I have no idea what I didn't have anything to do with it at all. It has to do, I think, with more understory materials.
Understood.
I would object to the characterization that it's primarily, I think with your word, was almost exclusively
Yep.
dedicated to there is protest, but keep in mind this group has also protested the John Cedric Middle School deforestation. So there are multiple
Of
articles
course.
about other deforestations.
I understand that. So I guess to further illuminate it, let me go through some of the articles. So forest violators claim protests against them are defamation. I believe this is the same picture that we showed earlier. In this, whoever is writing this article calls my clients clear cutters, code violators, says that their complaints riddled with grammar and spelling errors, say that they're extraordinarily selfish, they're entitled, they're refusing to understand their responsibilities. So that's the most recent article.
No, not the most recent. At the time of the screenshot, it might have been the most recent article. There's been other stuff
Understood.
that's gone up since.
The more recent one after that, Appeal of Southworth clear cutting updated, revealing new details. Again, I can go through each of this, but this is very clearly referencing the my client's property here. So that's another one. I would agree with you right here. Planting season ends with progress. This it does not appear at first blush to be an article regarding my clients. However, this appears to be a picture from the corner of your property onto my client's property. Is that correct?
That would be the case.
Okay.
That was progress.
Okay. And once again, referencing my clients. Permit violators. Wind damage here regarding wind snaps, cyclones, that kind of thing. Again, referencing my client's property. Talking about an appeal. Are you? I can keep going, but I think you're understanding, you can start to see the pattern and why I would assume that a lot of these are, and not assume, why I can see that a lot of these are directed at my clients.
I think directed at is not the correct term. Remember, the campaign has two purposes. One is to protect to protest the deforestation, and to protest the deforestation, it has to reference where the deforestation is. So I think wherever that reference comes up, that is included. In other words, there's the address.
Okay, understood. And this is the only place where trees have been cut in the area, is that correct? You had mentioned that there was an article about middle school, I think, before.
And that was another one involving Mr. Heacock that got people all fussed up.
Sure.
In other words, it was a danger tree
So,
permit where they went and cleared a converted forest at the middle school, and of course that
sure.
gets a lot of attention as well.
Kind of belatedly addressing Mr. Clemenson's, I guess, objection. I'll take that as an evidentiary objection. I mean, I think, I've repeatedly told Mr. Clemenson that the it's not really important here who the bad guy is and what kind of bad relationship the neighbors have or who's been acting poorly or that kind of thing. This seems to be kind of the same type of evidence we're looking at here. I did allow Mr. Clemenson to get into it a little bit every once in a while, but as with Mr. Clemenson, Mr. Derlin, let's not spend too much time on this because it's not really that
Understood.
pertinent to resolution of this appeal.
Understood. I get my only so my only point here was it just in terms of credibility and and testimony in the record, but I can move on.
I will say one more thing, Mr. Garland, is that the audience is important in any campaign, correct? And the audience of this campaign, whether it's the social media or websites or anything,
Yeah, sorry.
has
I
not
guess
been
I
your
don't mean to
clients.
cut you off, but I kind of do. I'm examining you right now.
I might answer that on redirect.
Understood. So, let me see. So, just regarding some of the property characteristics at the time, of any of the Edwards, any of their kind of development activity. Do you what was the status of your property at that point? I think we've discussed it a little bit, but it sounds like there was an existing clearing in your property that's right next to the entrance, the driveway entrance.
That's
Is that
correct.
correct?
So there was, as we showed in an exhibit earlier today, I think it was A306. Don't quote me. It was 3/4 an acre to be cleared in 2005. And in fact, Mr. Edwards said the applicant had contacted me and asked how that had come about. He was, he was looking to do a little bit of work, of course. And that was in 2018, I'd imagine. And so we did have some discussions after the Edwards first arrived about, how did this, what was the condition of our parcel? They did illuminate some of their plans for theirs. And so we talked about the two in conjunction with each other at the time.
Okay, understood. And so do you think that that clearing that exists on your property has an impact on, I mean, we've talked about a lot of impacts, but specifically that that had an impact on, let's say, wind conditions, animal impacts, light impacts, that kind of thing?
Well, when we're looking comparative impacts, we're looking at it from that meadow already had been cleared because we don't know what it was like before then. So our experience from baseline, and that's what we get back to here, right, is baseline, was that the wind, for instance, when we encountered it, would come into the bowl. And I commented to my wife once, it was like sitting in Candlestick Park in San Francisco, the stadium, and it would come into the bowl and sort of circle around and get kind of cold. But we could only go by what the condition was at the time. So what we're comparing it to now is, for instance, 2016, when we encountered it. What it was like when it was fully forested in 2004, who knows?
Okay, understood. Let's see. I think that's all my questions. Thank you.
Mr. Gerland. All right. I guess, Mr. Clemenson, it's you can sort of redirect yourself at this point if you want.
Yeah, and Your Honor, I agree about the relevancy of some of this stuff. I'll address the public campaign just really briefly here, because you know what, the public campaign gets back to the review, the DCD. In the end, that's where the target of the campaign was Steve Heacock and other people at the county, and so the purpose was to first of all, by the way, let me say there are no roles for the community in Title 21.04. I mean, there are roles for the applicant, there are roles for the county, for the community there isn't. But with any of these campaigns, it's to rally support for a forest restoration project and for the handling of an after-the-fact permit. One of the things we're running into that's weird here, and I'll say this is weird. We don't run into SEPA as an after-the-fact. How this has been handled defies the common sense rule for the community. And so the campaign has always been born from the perspective of trying to say to the county, hey, this requires something a little bit different. We know all these people that have walked through this forest through the years because they use these parcels like a public park, they know what this looked like. The applicants may not have put that all down there. Materials. The county really had no way of walking around a lot of it, but the community knows. And so the campaign for a long time never even, and most of it still doesn't, the social, they don't even use the Edwards names. And that's not the point here. The target is in part the county, and of course it's the other community groups. The Save Enatite group in East Bremerton is watching carefully because they're looking at what we do here and how the county handles this one to determine how they're going to approach any potential appeal someday down the road of the Anatai development. So I think it's important to remember here that the campaign's target is the county. We're trying to affect change. And this appeal then focuses that on Your Honor. I mean, it focuses it on the examiner. And so whatever's going on out there in the public, I mean, at this point, the campaign, we're winding down, I think, with the county portion. We're getting to the point where there's, you know, that's run its course. And there's some old material still on there, of course, that says contact the county, you know, contact Steve Heacock, Jeff Smith, Cecilia Olson, whatnot. But at some point, that's all going to get replaced. And then hopefully there'll be a resolution here where the protest portion of this can simply go away. I think that's the goal for all of us.
Is that it, Mr. Clemenson?
That's
All
all
right.
I've got. Yes, thank you.
Okay, that's perfectly fine. Let's yes, so now we can move on to the county, Minnesota. You had mentioned that you hadn't planned to present any witnesses. Is that correct?
No, I only plan to call Cecilia and Steve Heacock, and then obviously Jeff Smith for today from Mr. Clementson, and that's all the county has.
Oh, okay. I did have some questions of Mr. Heacock, if we could bring him back up, actually, something that to help me assess this case. Is Mr. Heacock watching? Mr. Heacock, can you join us for a second?
I see him listed, so I'll promote him
Yeah.
to the panelist so he can
Yes, he
respond.
doesn't. If he's not available, that's fine. But I, yeah, kind of.
Okay. He did send a chat in the Zoom that he was available, so you should see him pop up on your screen momentarily.
Hi, Mr. Heacock. Sorry to bring you back. I got very short questions. You know, and I can. You're just going to save me some time in looking up the county regulations, and of course, I'm going to
Okay.
verify afterwards. But I was kind of curious. You know, this is a circumstance where the Edwards kind of went further than they were allowed to with the dangerous tree removal permit. I mean, if they had applied for the proper permits up front, what would have been required here? A forest conversion permit, a, you know, optional conversion harvest planter? How would that have worked exactly?
It would have been a grading permit to do what they're planning to do.
And that includes the tree removal, isn't, aren't there some forest practices permits
The
that are
tree
triggered by
removal
that?
at, yeah, at the time then, the tree removal would have required I'm trying to think when that happened, because one of the complications, we took over conversion related logging from state DNR. I believe it was February of 2020, but I'm not positive on that. But so prior to that, a conversion logging activity would have been dealt with, where we would have said, oh, we're recommending approval of a conversion logging, and then that would have been sent to State Department of Natural Resources
Okay.
as
And you
the,
know,
yeah.
oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good.
And in terms of you know, mitigation measures for such a permit, what would have been kind of standard? Would some kind of a buffer been required, or they had to retain, you know, 6 foot buffer of existing trees on all property lines? Is that the kind of thing that would have been required?
Not necessarily, in the matter of a if it was going to be a logging only, like a thinning logging, we allow, you know, up to a 60% harvest for a logging activity, no stumping activities, that kind of thing. And that procedure is called a conversion option harvest permit. So we pre-approve essentially a state DNR logging. And
Although that's not what was done here, right? It was more than
no,
60%, wasn't
correct.
it?
Yes,
So it would
right.
have had to be a conversion permit of
This
some
is a
kind as
conversion.
well.
This is a
Yeah.
conversion, right.
And so for
In
that
a
though, would a
yeah.
buffer be required? Because from
In
what
a
I
conversion,
recall, it usually is, isn't
in
it?
a
Yeah.
convert, I'm hearing a lot of crosstalk. I'm not sure what that is. So in a conversion option harvest permit, we would require a 25-foot perimeter buffer, except obviously in you know, entry roadways and things like that. But this was not that kind of application.
Okay. And but if they had come up to you and said, we want to, clear it the way that they did, ultimately, that's what you would have required, right? Was that conversion permit?
If it were oh, back then, you mean in 2019?
I mean, if you had the permitting authority back then.
In 2019, then we would have said, hey, we have a grading permit. Here's the grading permit detail. It would not have required a 25-foot perimeter buffer with
Not
that activity. Yes, there's two different subjects. In a conversion option harvest permit, it's a state permit, the State Department of Natural Resources. So we would have then at the time, if they applied for that, we would have notified state DNR through a letter that we're approving that activity. The difference in a conversion option harvest permit would be that we'd also require full implementation of the buffers of the wetland, and we would not have required a perimeter buffer. And the complication with that was would be that whatever trees within a tree length and a half around the house, we would have approved. Because the state has no authority to remove trees around the perimeter of a house. That's precisely why, when they did apply for a DNR logging permit, as I understand, the state said, oh no, that's you have houses all around you. And the complication here is that it's not just the Edwards house. But it's all the surrounding houses around the Edwards in a danger tree permit that's in Edwards' control. And so, in a danger tree permit, it also would include those houses and residences and the trees within a tree length and a half of those residences. So, the rules come from state DNR, but state DNR pushes those folks to the local government, whether it's city or county.
I guess it kind of lets you kind of know of my line of thinking here is
Okay.
this is kind of these are kind of unusual impacts because in a sense they're not what the Edwards have done hasn't created impacts on adjoining property. What they're being asked to do is retain trees to prevent impacts from adjoining properties, got because the trees prevent the heat and the wind and the aesthetic impacts. So it's kind of like you're requiring a one property owner to maintain a condition for the benefit of somebody else, And so one way to look at this is what is the responsibility to maintain those trees in that case? And the way I think that the appropriate way to look at it is to look at state law and say, well, if they had lawfully applied for a permit, what would they be required to do? That's their obligation to maintain the trees. And so that's why I was trying to find out from you, what would be required, if they had properly applied for what they eventually did. And you're saying they wouldn't be required to do a buffer, but at the same time,
Not
you're saying they'd only be
for the
required
permit.
to do 60% removal, and they've done more than that.
There's
So,
two kinds of permits. That's what we're not
So
getting.
which permit would authorize what they've done to the
Conversion,
property?
a conversion logging, and then the conversion logging would be an approval letter from the county saying we're approving this related
Okay,
tree
and no buffer
removal
would be
and
required
grading,
there.
and it's through a grading permit.
And
So we
no
would not
buffer would be.
require, wouldn't require it. Nope.
That's huh. Okay. All right. That's basically
Now,
that's yeah, my bottom line.
if this property, and I've talked about this before, if this property had been a large lot and created through a large lot subdivision, then it would have a perimeter buffer, more than likely, adjacent to neighbors. In this case, this is not a large lot. This was an after the fact. We've, attempted to mitigate for headlight glare and impacts. We can't control dust. Dust would blow no matter if there were trees there or not. We would have dust on the driveway. The trees, the wind goes through the trees. The noise goes through the trees. Harley-Davidson motorcycles have very low frequency muffler emissions of noise, and lower emission noises travel way further. That's how elephants talk to each other miles away, is that it's super low frequency. So low frequency noises travel no matter if they're trees or not. So
a couple more questions. Just that the size of the trees that are used being used as mitigation here, is that kind of the standard? But those look like what, 2 foot trees or something? I mean, I've seen counties and cities require 6 foot trees at a minimum, and you could, if you're really tough, require I think 20 foot trees, although that's exorbitantly expensive to put in. I mean,
they probably wouldn't survive. Yeah, right.
Okay, so why this size trees? Where did that come from, and why is that reasonable for this?
That essentially comes forth through a more of a rural understanding that if you can't get to watering those trees, they're going to have a better survival possibility if they're either bare root or smaller potted trees. Bald and burlapped trees are not going to do well in a setting like this because their roots are not established. It takes a long time for the roots to establish. And if you don't know what you're doing in relation to replanting, then you can create, even with bare root plantings, you create a J root. If a hole isn't dug deep enough with a proper tool, planting tool, then like a Hodad or something like that, then you will not have a successful plant reestablished. So it's precisely why, our permit has the inspection for the landscaping. And I'm going to look back in the permit because we had added a condition about a condition. And then so in the permit review itself, we have conditions. And then we have then associated inspections that go with that. We have a landscaping inspection. I'm going to look back to see why there isn't a specific condition for these areas about the replantings. I'm not sure how that happened, but we'll look into that.
How confident are you that these trees will eventually create a solid barrier? Is it your experience that they eventually do grow into that? How long does that take exactly?
Okay, well, I'll give you an example. I've done a stream restoration and wetland restoration on my property. And I used bare root material and potted material. And the bare rooted trees in and along the stream corridor, it's an old farm. I wanted to reestablish buffers, and I felt it was important to do so. It didn't matter whether I had 2 gallon potted Sitka spruce and Western red cedar, or whether I had bare root. I planted them at the right time of year. They all survived. They all carried on, and the bare root material outcompeted eventually because potted material, the roots and the root system takes about a year to 2 years to establish. The bare root is going to town with roots. If you had a 12 inch, 14 inch, 1-1 or 1-2, potted, bare root plant versus, plant that was 2 feet tall in a pot, if you have the right planting methodology, if you do mulching and things like that, you're going to have a similar result and a similar survival. Precisely why we're going to require as well in the relation to this landscape that in the permit we'll have a required bond so that we can be assured that those plants survive. that we have an active landowner that's going to be maintaining them, that's going to maintain for invasive plants and things like that. And also, you know, also a shrub layer too is going to be, you know, part of the requirement. But again, we're not to that point yet. We have, you know, issued and then appealed.
Right. Yeah. But my main question was eventually it will be site obscuring. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, it will. Oh, yeah. So I'm sorry. So I'll tell you, I did that planting in 2006. Those trees are now 20 to 30 feet tall. And they're extremely bushy. Okay. So they've done very well. Yes.
Is there a benefit to requiring a fence around there, or is that maybe actually a bad idea because it prevents wildlife migration, that kind of thing?
A solid panel fence. You know, if you had a solid panel fence around everything, then you're excluding wildlife. Yeah. Yep. Good point. Yep.
Final question. I asked you before, you know, given all the information you've seen, whether you change your threshold determination. You've now heard Mr. Clemenson's final comments. Does that change your opinion as to whether any additional mitigation is necessary?
Well, I would say that upon inspection and specific inspection out on the site, we may require alterations. We're going to require a landscaping bond, and that bond needs to be applied for. And it's essentially a monitoring and maintenance bond. So if there's some corrections that need to happen, I am more than happy to go out and, assist with, hey, maybe the spacing needs to be a little more dense, you know, throughout one of the areas, that kind of thing, to kind of analyze exactly where that light path might go for headlights, for instance. Mr. Clemenson had a really good visual that he provided about how the light might come around that corner. I thought that was a really good demonstration. I would be pleased. I understand. I was in, you know, the meeting where we, you know, tried to, assist with hearing the negotiation that may occur, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I was really surprised when we didn't quite get there.
Okay. So you still think your threshold determination was accurate given Mr. Clancy's comments?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Sorry to have added to the time here, but Ms. Oder, do you have any questions given my questions?
No, thank you.
Mr. Derlin, any additional questions?
I guess just one. So are you saying that you will be requiring a landscaping and maintenance bond as part of that?
Yes.
Okay. Was that in the original documentation?
I think that there was a component of that. There certainly is for the wetland and, in relation to the landscape inspection, we always require a bond, a maintenance bond for any kind of landscape. If there's landscaping required, I mean, it's a standard thing.
Understood. Thank you.
All right. And certainly, you know, when we get to the closing, if the county wants to recommend that added condition, that's something I can consider.
Oh, sure.
And Mr. Clemenson, final question, any Mr. Clemenson of Mr. Heacock?
Yeah, just two really quick for you, Mr. Heacock. A landscaping plan is often accompanying, or a landscape plan often accompanies Title 17-500. And would that guide future inspections in this case?
Yes.
Okay, so a landscape plan would be produced after issuance, and then so when the inspector comes out as part of the bond and says, okay, which one survived, which one, and would that look fairly similar to what we see with the planting plan with the wetlands area, you know, to designate which plants would go? Okay.
Precisely, yes.
Perfect, okay. Is there any particular reason why that wasn't required before approval?
Well, typically in an approval for a grading permit, that we would subject the at the issuance. Then we have the pre-construction meeting, and then at that time of the pre-construction meeting, that's where we require the separate plans, especially for this kind, more of a residential, if you will, rural type of project like this.
And one last follow-up. I got one follow-up as well. In terms of fencing, if solid fencing is installed around the exterior, would it be helpful to leave holes? I guess is I have no a better way of putting it, nor for wildlife to come through. So in other words, fencing sections, but not the entirety of it. Does that still allow the wildlife to come in and out?
Well, I'll tell you, previous farm planner hat on, that typically fencing for, for including the farm animals, typically there are specifications for, allowing deer and bear, things like that, to go through fencing. A bear will climb right underneath a wire fence, so they will squeeze right underneath there. So, but you can create livestock exclusion fencing, inclusion fencing, and wildlife inclusion by having lower rails, for corner posts, for brace posts, for instance. When you build a fence, you have a top brace post, and for a identified livestock area, or sorry, wildlife crossing area, that you can see, oh, there's a wildlife trail. Let's put a fence a little bit lower down than you would in a standard brace
Okay.
post. So there's conveyance that would be figured out. But in this case, now the landowner said, well, we don't have any desire to do additional farming. I mean, the last time I was out there, they had some chickens, and I think their goats had passed away, I believe. I'm not positive.
Yeah, this is so much about the applicant's animals as much as it's about the remaining wildlife. I mean, we're interested in maintaining the flow of wildlife, and that's the concern as part of
Well,
the
and certain
yeah.
certainly wildlife is going to go around a panel fence.
Yeah.
If you have a 50-foot long panel fence, solid cedar panel fence,
They'll
our
follow.
only requirement is that if the fence is over 7 feet in height, you get a permit, and that's because of the wind load. And the wind load's going to happen, no matter if you had trees or not. That wind velocity of 85 miles an hour is the specification, and so we want to be assured that the fence isn't going to blow over and hurt somebody. So
Which is
that's
yeah
one.
that and that was our concern when we had a slightly over height section. We got the permit and that was good.
Yes.
Um,
Yes.
so, so so if fencing were continued, 6 or 7 foot solid fencing by other neighbors or as part of this permit, if every 50 feet an opening was left, in other words, we're not too concerned about the impacts in that 3 foot opening, would that be adequate just for all the smaller wildlife? Not the lives, we're not concerned about the livestock and but just for all the rest of the wildlife to get through, would that be
Well,
effective?
and you're talking about a fence, longer than where the headlight glare may be a condition. I don't know. I don't know if I can answer that. Why would you leave gap? The wildlife will go around fencing.
Okay. I'm not talking about not even specific to this parcel, just any. I mean, if you're going to fence off one forest from another forest, and if for whatever reason they decide to do solid, it is it. I would assume for the wildlife, it's beneficial to leave openings periodically.
If in a forest to forest setting, for fencing purposes, it's more so in typical when we're looking at a rural conversion logging where someone's wanting to improve their property for livestock holding purposes, that the fencing would not be a solid cedar fence. I mean, the cost is prohibitive. The whole point is retaining your livestock, keeping them safe, and then still allowing wildlife, especially around perimeters of the property and things like that. So
All
those
right.
things are always thought as a consideration.
I can agree with you about your sentiment on the cost. Solid cedar fencing is not inexpensive,
Yeah, it's not cheap. Yeah.
especially these days. One last question along, because you mentioned the agricultural fencing. So for livestock, if the landscaping, this landscape plan were put in place for this, would a part of that be the understanding that livestock fencing would be placed on the interior of the buffer so that the animals would be kept out of the buffer? In other words, is the assumption that the animals would not be in that buffer area if a buffer were required for
Oh,
seedlings?
like in a wetland, like the
Oh no,
wetland
just yeah,
here.
even if it's the buffer for the light impacts.
Well, it could be either way. I mean, a panel fence can be on either side. I would suggest
Oh, okay, got
that
it.
the vegetation be in front of a panel fence, because then it attenuates that just look of a solid fence versus the it's meant to be an additive for screening purposes.
Yeah, and that, yeah, and that's, I agree. It's not where I was going really. I'm thinking about, I would never advocate that, for instance, the applicants in this case put a solid fence on the uphill or on the sorry, on the inside
Oh,
of
yeah.
the buffer. You know, that doesn't make any sense. But in other words, if they put agricultural fencing for the animals, for
Oh,
animal pastures,
I
so
see.
forth,
Oh.
would it be understand as far as the landscaping plan, you put in the standard agricultural fence to keep the
Yeah.
animals out of the CEPA required buffers, right?
Yeah, right. So
Okay.
in the point of a hedgerow planting or something like that, it depends on the kind of livestock you're going to have. Because if you have goats, the goats are going to have a party on that vegetation. So if the purpose of the vegetation is for screening, then yes, you would have a low fence, or you might put an electric fence in or something like that to exclude the livestock from getting in there. Yeah, I have alpacas, and they love to eat vegetation under the fence. That's their deal. So, yeah.
Illustrious. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Heacock. That's all
Very
I have.
good.
Yes, I certainly agree
And
for bringing you back up.
if I could, I have a important review meeting to do. I'm getting a call on it right now. So really, for like a half an hour, I need to be unavailable if that's possible.
Yeah, we probably won't need you anymore today. So,
Okay,
yeah.
very
Okay.
good.
Thanks, Mr.
Thank
Heacock.
you.
Okay, Mr. Derlin, did you have any witnesses you wanted to bring?
Hi, Caitlin. Well, I have the
He's got you're
all.
still on your. There you go. Okay.
Okay. No, I didn't have any witnesses.
Well, I guess that, and then Mr. Derlin, have you found out about Ms. Edwards?
Yeah, so she would be able to testify at 4:45 today.
All right, I guess we're doing it. And Ms. Jones, you're okay to working a little past 5 o'clock today, is that right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Is there she? I believe she is the last portion of the proceedings, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's Mr. Clemenson has his opportunity for rebuttal. I don't know if he's, needs to take that up, but yeah, that would be pretty much the end of it. And we can talk about the closing. I think did we talk about we I think we talked about closing written briefs, right? So yeah,
Yeah.
and I could even
So,
take care of that by email, but we can talk about that
okay.
once we
Yeah.
get there.
My understanding was we were going to have Mr. Clemenson submit his, and then we'd submit our response, and then he'd have a chance to reply.
Good. Okay. I was trying to remember if this was the one where I said that, because it makes the most sense here to kind of have Mr. Clemenson organize his. Mr. Clemenson, real quick, I think that the most helpful thing is to, and you already did this in your revised appeal. I mean, that is really well written, the revised appeal, where you identify each impact, the evidence that supports it, and your arguments about, why mitigation isn't sufficient to mitigate it, essentially. I think you could basically take your revised appeal and just add the testimony we got from the hearing and any extra exhibits you got in there since then, and that would cover a lot of it. Also, what I'll do is once I recall is I'll send you a prior SEPA decision I have, which kind of lays out the judicial standards that I look at. So you kind of focus you on at least what I've said before in prior hearings is pertinent SEPA law. And of course, if you disagree with some of those conclusions, you can do that as well in your briefing, and the other attorneys can as well. But it'll be a decision from Edmonds that where the SEPA appellant won part of it, and it, like I said, it outlines the standard for adequate SEPA review, as well as what the overall standard is for probable significant adverse environmental impacts.
Sure.
So with that, anyway, we'll see you all at 4:45.
One quick question for you,
Yeah.
Mr. Olbricks. We had mentioned, are the standard, I agree with you that we don't want to just reiterate, that the appellants don't want to reiterate everything from the appeal statement in closing. It doesn't serve any purpose. Are we sticking true then to the brief limits? So we're at, what, 25 pages, I believe we had decided. If we stay true to that, I think we should be able to make that work. But if, as long as I'm not adding back in all the stuff from the appeal statement, I think we should be fine with that. Is that where we're still headed?
Is that in the Kitsap rules? Does it have a 25-page limit? Is that what it
We
is?
had
No, you would
expanded.
establish 25. Kitsap rules, I believe, is 15,
Oh, okay.
which,
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to
and
recall.
we would prefer to have it stay at 15.
I
Yeah, I
think
did switch this. I did say, sorry.
the appellants would prefer 25, but that's in part because we've had some conflicting testimony that we've got to quote from here.
I think I'll stick to the 25, but yeah, so we'll stick to that. But yeah, be as brief as you can, of course, Mr. Clemenson. That's always the goal here.
Get
So
us out into a better place, better time of day. Yes.
okay, we'll see y'all at 4:45.